Dave, anybody else we are holding for?
No, we're good to go now.
Okay. I'd like to call the May 5th, 2022 board meeting to order and remind everyone to please mute your phone or your computer microphone when not speaking. In addition, if anyone other than a board member would like to speak, please use the raise hand feature and wait to be acknowledged by the board recorder. The board recorder will now conduct roll call for the record.
All right, thank you. City of Beaverton, Commissioner Sanssouci.
I'm here.
City of Hillsborough, Commissioner Judah.
I'm here.
TVWD, Commissioner Duggan.
Present.
Thank you. This concludes roll call. All other attendees will be recorded using Microsoft Teams.
All right, thank you. The next thing on today's agenda is the General Manager's Report, and Mr. Kraska will present the General Manager's Report.
Thank you, Chair Judah. Good afternoon, Commissioners. And so, as usual, we'll start the General Manager's Report with a safety minute. And today's safety minute is preventing golf injuries. So, a timely subject with the weather improving. And injuries can happen when you're playing golf. They're often related to a result of poor mechanics, not naming any names here or anything, but poor mechanics or overuse. Lower back injuries are common. Other injuries could relate to your elbow or wrist or hand or shoulder. You can avoid these by following a few golf injury prevention safety tips, including when you're on the course is to warm up. So do so by taking a light walk or a stretch before playing. Pay close attention to the shoulders, back, and arms when doing so. Choosing proper footwear, wearing golf shoes with short cleats, because long cleats dig into the sod and hold your feet planted while you swing, which may place more strain on the knees. Staying hydrated, especially in hot weather. Drink water before, during, and after playing. And sun protection. Avoid the sun's peak hours if you can. During sunny weather, wear light clothing, sunscreen, sunglasses, and a hat. When you're off the course, next slide. Some things to consider is perhaps taking some lessons. Not saying that anyone here needs any lessons or anything, but you know, if you're just starting off golfing, learning proper techniques will prevent possible injuries. Strengthening your muscles helps. Stronger muscles are also less likely to be injured. For best results, do strength training exercises year-round and focus on muscle balance, especially around the shoulders. Focus on flexibility. Regular stretching can improve your range of motion and lead to a more fluid golf swing. And build up your endurance. Regular aerobic activity can help you staying power when you're on the course. And so that's it for today's safety minute. So stay safe and happy golfing. Now, continuing on with any comments by any of the commissioners? Yes.
Yes, Mr. Kraska, do those safety tips also apply if you're just doing miniature golf?
Probably, but to a lesser degree, I would assume.
You missed the part about the special golf language that's involved when you're on the course.
Well, I'll actually credit Annette for helping me pull this presentation together. I think she did a great job, but yeah, sorry we missed the golf language when you make a particularly errant shot. So we'll add that to next year's report. All right, so continuing on with today's General Manager's Report, we'll start off with our permitting and communications updates. So the water supply program permitting efforts remain very active. Attached to this General Manager's Report is a tabulation of all the permits and approvals recently granted and a status of those currently in process. So regarding some permitting highlights, I have a couple of them for you today. The program received permits for the Res 1.0 and PLM 5.3 projects, including the 1200C from the DEQ and the utility right-of-way and grading permits from Washington County. Also received Bonneville Power Administration issued land use agreements for PLM 4.2, our Metzger Pipeline East 1.3 project, and our PLW 2.2 projects. Regarding communications highlights, the program communications team hosted an in-person meeting for Riggs Road neighbors in rural Washington County regarding the Shoals Area Pipeline project, that's our PLM 5.3 project. Members of the Hoffman-Fowler construction team also attended to share the construction schedule and how the team will work to limit impacts such as noise, dust, and traffic.
Another communication highlight is that the program sent letters this month to neighbors who are adjacent to the portion of Cornelius Pass Pipeline Project, our PLW 2.1 project, that is within the old ODOT rail corridor. Letters advise of the opportunity to license WWSS property that is adjacent to their homes, but we will not need for construction or long-term maintenance of the WWSS pipeline. Over the years, some of these property owners have landscaped and placed personal items like play structures on this property. These license agreements provide a means of protecting the WWSS interests as the property owner and maintain good relations with the neighbors that will be directly impacted by our construction operations. So essentially kind of a win-win opportunity for all of us. Neighbors that opt not to enter into an agreement were advised to remove their personal property by April 30. Pipeline construction will begin later this year. Now moving on to construction status updates. Attached to the general manager's report is a tabulation of all the projects in construction and their status. We have a few highlights here. On our MPE 1.2 project, we continued nighttime construction of the 48-inch water line in a congested work area with numerous utility crossings and challenging traffic control requirements between Highway 217 and Hall Boulevard. If you've driven on Hall Boulevard recently, kind of around Washington Square, you've seen our work there. It's pretty hectic right now, but we're getting through it. We've also completed the fourth tunnel on MPE 1.2 out of seven total tunnels on that project, and we began shaft construction for the fifth tunnel. We issued notice to proceed on the treatment plant project. The contractor has begun earthwork and has mobilized the temporary field trailers. And we issued notice to proceed on the Res 1.0 PLM 5.3 project. Contractor mobilized temporary field trailers and began stripping topsoil and excavating weathered rock layers in preparation for rock blasting. Moving on to the steel market update, the price of hot rolled band, the material used to fabricate WWSS transmission pipe, continues to fluctuate in 2022. Pricing peaked in September of 2021 and steadily declined through February of this year to a 14-month low. The pricing has since increased approximately 48% from the low. However, the rate of increase has slowed to single-digit percentage increases. Current pricing is approximately 5% less than the 14-month average and 25% below the peak. Price volatility may impact production rates and lead times. Program staff will work with our construction contractors to mitigate possible delays to our construction projects. And staff are continuing to monitor the steel market and still are not recommending any change to construction procurement plans and strategies at this time. Quarterly financial report, task 4.D of the annual work plan requires the managing agency to prepare a quarterly financial report and provide them to the WWSS board as part of the packet. Attached to this general manager's report is the quarterly financial statement for the period ending March 31, 2022. And finally, for awareness, the board minutes will be posted May 16th, so a little bit later than usual. This is to accommodate staff availability that will be changing our delivery date at that time. And so that's it for today's general manager's report. I'd be glad to take any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Kraska. Are there any questions for Dave at this time? All right, seeing none, we will proceed. The next item on our agenda is public comment. Dave, are we expecting any today? Or Annette, maybe you know if we have any lined up to speak today.
No requests today.
All right. The public comment time is set aside for persons wishing to address the board on items on a consent agenda and matters not on the agenda. Additional public comment will be invited on agenda items as they are presented. Then it says Annette. Sorry, I got that out of order. And thank you. Annette will continue to monitor the chat feature for any future requests. The next item is the consent agenda. Consent agenda items are considered to be routine and may be enacted in one motion without separate discussion. Any board member may request that an item be removed by motion for discussion and separate action. Any items requested to be removed from the consent agenda for separate discussion will be considered immediately after the board has approved those items which do not require discussion. So A is to approve the April 7th, 2022 meeting minutes. Do I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda as presented? And please remember to state your name prior to making the motion and a second for this action.
Commissioner Sanssouci moves approval of the consent agenda.
Commissioner Duggan seconds.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. The board recorder will now conduct a voting roll call for the record.
All right. Thank you. City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsborough?
Yes.
And TVWD?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. The motion passes. On to our next item today is our business agenda items. Number A, or letter A, is to consider adopting resolution WWSS-04-22. Approving an intergovernmental agreement between the Willamette Water Supply Commission and the City of Sherwood for system interconnection to provide long-term capability for emergency and supplemental water supply between the two systems. Mr. Kraska will present the staff report.
Thank you again, Chair Judah and Commissioners. So you've heard us talking about this IGA for a little while now, and we're finally ready to push it across the finish line, and the timing is good for us to do so. I've got a short presentation here today to kind of walk you through some of the highlights of the IGA, then I'd be glad to take your questions. So next slide, please. So the outline is just to provide some background to this IGA, the highlights of it, explain to you the infrastructure that we're talking about in this IGA, and then finally the requested action. So the background of this IGA is here. So first is to understand where we're working here. So our treatment plant is located in what's called Sherwood's Plan Tonkin Employment Area. And it's shown in this graph this graphic on the right that shows this whole part of the world there outlined in red. And so for orientation here, this is the eastern eastern portion of the city of Sherwood, bordered on, along the top there by Tualatin and Sherwood Road. On the east side there is the new Southwest 124th Avenue, and Tualatin obviously is further east. And so it's quite a bit of land there that Sherwood, since I think around 2010, has been planning to develop commercial industrial land for their Tonkin employment area, and really also to increase and diversify the local tax revenue. You can see, however, that when we located our treatment plant on that land, it takes a fair chunk of the Tonkin employment area. And so in presentations that over the time that I've been making to City Council and to the mayor and to City Council, they've expressed some concern about that, about our impacts to their long-term planning for the city. And we're wondering what was in it for them. What were the benefits to the city from having us occupy so much of this land and not providing a tax revenue to them? And so one of their requests from us was to have an emergency intertie between our system and theirs. It would be a maximum capacity of 5 MGD, and that we would pay for it, essentially. We would pay for the design and construction of this intertie. The other thing that, and then in this IGA, there's other details that I'll get into in a second, but this was one of their specific requests as a condition of City Council and Mayor support for our development on their land in the city. Next slide, please. So the highlights of it is that this, like I mentioned, provides for exchanging up to 5 MGD either way. So either between from our system to theirs or to their system to ours. The agencies, however, are empowered to evaluate their ability to meet the request before committing. So, for example, let's say the city of Sherwood in some years from now said, geez, you know, we've got a bit of a struggle here. We need 3 MGD from you for the next week. WWSS operations would evaluate its ability to meet that demand, and both in capacity and time, and then respond with whether that could be met or make a modified offer basically back. The agencies, it also requires the parties to develop an operations and maintenance plan. So the important part about that is the IGA does not include the operations and maintenance of the details of that in the IGA. So it basically says develop a plan to do so. And then the ongoing costs of any operations and maintenance would be shared. So WWSS and the City of Sherwood would share the cost of that. And then finally, another detail in there is that the party receiving water will be compensated by the other party. So some of the other details that are in the IGA really talk to some of the infrastructure that's being provided by this interconnection to make sure that both systems are protected. And I think that we can show that probably on the next slide here pretty well. So the image on the left-hand side of this is the location plan. And so you can see kind of near the top of that image, Southwest Ore Drive. And so that's the new road that we're going to be constructing as part of the water treatment plan project. And Ore Drive was the original name of that road. It's now, the city has changed its mind and has now landed on, I think it's Ice Age Road now is what they're wanting to call it. So that may be changing. But anyways, that road is essentially the northern boundary of a water treatment plant property. And then basically just off that northern edge, you see where this emergency supply interconnection infrastructure is. And so the detail of that is shown on the right here. You can see the two boxes that are the first part of the interconnection, and what those are flow meters. And so flow meters in one direction, flow meter in the other direction. So depending on which direction the water is flowing, we'll be tracking the water shared between the two systems. The lower box there is backflow prevention. So in a situation where we would be receiving water from the city of Sherwood requires backflow prevention for protection of their system. And so basically the way this works is if we were to receive water from Sherwood, it would flow through the flow meter on the left-hand side there through the backflow prevention and then go straight into our clear well, essentially. So essentially we would receive finished water, potable water from the city of Sherwood, go directly into our clear well, and then we would have our finished water pumps to deliver it to our transmission system. So this would be valuable to us in a situation that our treatment plant was down, but we still, our finished water pumps were still operational. So from the standpoint of a regional interconnection between systems, very valuable. In the opposite situation, if we were to supply water from our system to the city of Sherwood, we would basically be delivering it from our finished water pumps through basically pressure flow connection through the flow meter on the left-hand side, then into the city system. And I think that's it for the infrastructure. Then I think we just go to the final slide here. Oh, before the final slide, which is the requested action, shared a lot of information there. Wonder if there's any questions before we get to the requested action.
Thank you, Dave. Are there any questions about this IGA and the actions that's being requested today?
Well, this is Commissioner Duggan. I just wanted to make a quick comment. Yesterday, I was reminded by my fellow TVWD Commissioner Jim Doan of the long history that TVWD has had with the City of Sherwood on a number of joint ventures. And the casual reader of this IGA or thinking about it, we're paying for the entire connection, it might seem kind of one-sided. But when you take into consideration the points that Mr. Kraska made about the land being taken from what would otherwise been a taxable industrial area, and the other impacts that the treatment plant has in that corner of the world, I think this is a great opportunity to improve the reliability of the system. And again, my fellow Commissioner Jim Doan pointed out that the flow will probably be going more toward Sherwood than from Sherwood system to the Willamette Water Supply System. But in any event, it's very worthwhile and worth the expense to make this connection and take care of this opportunity and satisfy the land use condition of approval. So have no issues there. So no comment, but just wanted to relay that to my fellow commissioners and whoever else might be thinking about this particular IGA.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Mark, did you have any?
Nope.
Okay, so Dave, I have one, it might be two questions depending on your answer. And it's been a couple years since we talked about this, so I apologize for not remembering the details. I'm assuming that City of Sherwood does not use fluoridated water, since meaning we're not going to be giving them water that's treated with fluoride, and we're not getting, if we went the other way, we're not getting back water that's treated with fluoride. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, is the water produced at the Willamette River Water Treatment Plant is not fluoridated, and I do not believe that Sherwood has its own fluoridation equipment.
Okay, so that was a good answer, thank you. I guess the second part, and it's somewhat related, is we've talked quite a bit at our City Hillsborough and as well in this meeting about the efforts that are needed to make sure the taste of the water is not altered. You know, now that Hillsborough have two systems that we can run off of, and the mixing those waters into two systems and things like that, to make sure that our customers are, you know, don't have water tasting one way one day and another way another day. And I'm exaggerating, but based on that mix. So are we going to be testing our water with adding Sherwoods in there and vice versa?
I assume Chair Judah, you're talking just about the situation where we're operating this emergency interconnection, and so it would be a temporary operation, and it would be under emergency conditions and so on. But still, would the customer detect a change in taste, essentially? I doubt it in that particular situation, because the treatment technologies used at the Willamette River Water Treatment Plant are almost identical to the ones we're using at our water treatment plant. The one difference is that the level of ozone treatment at the Willamette River Water Treatment Plant is greater. They will be using more ozone than we use at our treatment plant, because we will be using less ozone because we have UV as a disinfectant. So our treatment plant will use less ozone and less chlorine than the Willamette River Water Treatment Plant. So there may be a slight change in flavor profile, because sometimes in certain water conditions, certain water temperatures, people can detect a bit of the taste that ozone imparts on water, but it would be very slight. And similarly for us, when we talk about the taste of the water coming from the Willamette, or from our treatment plant, the WWSS treatment plant, to the City of Hillsborough, for example, both waters are chlorinated. They will have very similar characteristics. Some people are very sensitive, and some people will be able to detect a change, but I wouldn't expect much of that in either Beaverton or Hillsborough. Maybe to a certain degree, we'll go through that in Portland, in TVWD, because of the switch from the Portland supply, which is going to be somewhat different because it's chloraminated water. But that's something that we're going to be working our way through as we work through the details of the water supply integration project that Joelle is in front of.
Thank you. And I assume that you were referring to the difference between the quality of the water we're going to get from the WWSS water treatment plant and the quality of the water that TVWD currently produces when that mixes. But TVWD's might be different than Hillsborough's, might be different than Beaverton's. I mean, it's to JWC, you know, is one treatment plant, but not everybody is solely relying on the JWC water. So, I mean, what's the worst case? The worst case is we're mixing water, we're causing flows to go other directions, and a couple of years ago, we heard terrible stories out of Flint for, reversing, and that's clear on the other end of the spectrum. But if I'm just talking about the quality of water at the moment, particularly the taste, that's why I brought that up.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all the things that we're looking at in terms of the water supply integration project. The situation in Flint, it was a catastrophe. There were so many ways that failed. It would take too long for me to get into it in this particular meeting, but
Not needed.
Yeah, Yeah, we are not going to allow that to happen, and we're not in a situation where it's likely to happen, even if we weren't on top of it. Because the water sources that we're talking with are not so dramatically different as what they were dealing with Flint, and we don't have the lead risk in our systems that they have at Flint. But still, in terms of public health, we're in good shape because the waters are very similar. In terms of the aesthetics of the water, the taste of the water, that's where we may get some people detecting a difference in taste, and it'll be incumbent on us to educate the customers well in advance of the switch that they may that's okay, that they may detect a slight change in the taste of the water, but it doesn't mean that the water is unsafe. And frankly, after passage of time for a little bit of the water going through the systems, they won't be able to detect the change anymore.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for Mr. Kraska?
Okay, all right. Next slide.
Oops, I'm sorry.
I was just going to request this slide here, just the requested board action.
All right. Do I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution WWSS-04-22 approving intergovernmental agreement between the Willamette Water Supply System Commission and the City of Sherwood for system interconnection to provide long-term capability for emergency or supplemental water supply between the two systems? Please remember to state your name prior to making the motion and a second for this action item.
Commissioner Sanssouci will move the requested action.
Commissioner Duggan seconds.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. The board recorder will now conduct a voting roll call for the record.
All right, thank you. City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsborough?
Yes.
And TVWD?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, the motion passes. Item B on the business agenda items, consider approving contract 2022-055 for $49,215,771 with Emery & Sons Construction Group, LLC, for MPE 1.3 pipeline construction for the Willamette Water Supply Program. Mr. Britch will present the staff report.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Judah, Commissioners. So again, talking about our MPE 1.3 project and asking the board's approval for the construction contract. Next, please. So just a quick overview here of the presentation. I'll give you an overview of the project, talk about our construction procurement approach, what were our bid results, how that relates to our budget information, and then finally the requested action. Next, please. So, like many of our projects, we're building these pipelines in some of the busiest roads of Washington County, and this one is no exception. So it's in Shoals Ferry Road. It starts on the left there at Roy Rogers and ends on the right at Nimbus, so getting close to the Highway 217 interchange. That figure you see there with all the notes, there is extensive coordination that we had to go through with Washington County related to even getting the approvals to do this work. And some of the highlights of those requirements are indicated in the various notes there. Probably a little too small to read. But, you know, like many projects, and I'd say this one in particular, it's really a traffic control project, and then we're also putting a pipe in, and that's part of solving this. And so in the case of this project, it's 17,700 linear feet of 48-inch welded steel pipe and crosses a whole bunch of major intersections, you know, along the way. You can see the list there. Next. So related to our bid procurement process, so we had an invitation to bid in February of this year. Like all our projects advertised in the DJC. Normally, we offer proprietary meetings in advance of the submittal of the bid. So we're trying to, you know, give the contractors opportunity to ask questions about any of the elements of the work or requirements. Normally, we had participation in those pre-meetings. In this case, none of the firms elected to send out that request. So we received two bids from Emery & Sons and Kerr. The public bid opening was on April 5. And just a little background on those two firms, they're also the ones who are doing work in the immediate vicinity. Emery & Sons is doing our PL MPE 1.2 project in the Washington Square area. And then Kerr's doing that $100 million project along Highway 217 and all the improvements. If you drove through the area, you know what I'm talking about there. Next, please. So with the two bids, Emery & Son was the low bid for the amount you can see there, just over $49 million. Kerr was about 10% higher. So following our normal process, we do an internal review to make sure there's no errors, ambiguities, that all the pricing looks right. And so our team did that evaluation and determined that Emery & Sons was the lowest responsive bidder and the respondent determined to be most advantageous to the owner. Next. So this slide talks about the contract amount, the recommended project cost with contingency, and then how does that compare to the baseline? So the baseline 7.0 was established at around $45.3 million. The contract price at 49 for Emery. With all our projects, we recommend that there's 10% contingency added at the beginning of construction, so that brings the value to just over $54 million. And which means that a potential increase of $8.9 million over what was in baseline 7. So the second bullet there that you see, it talks about how do we address the budget variance in this case. And so because this is an ancillary project, the management reserve was not identified for this particular project and the additional funding would be responsible directly from TBWD. Next slide, I'll just talk about why we think it was higher. So go ahead and advance the slide, please. So just to start out, our baseline 7 was based on the latest available information that we had at the time of its preparation, and that was the engineer's 90% opinion of probable construction cost. And so there's a few things there that I'm going to kind of walk through that talks about where we believe those additional costs came from and, you know, what was the cause of them. So between the 90% design and the final completion of the bid documents and the bidding process, there's a number of scope elements that weren't fully identified and worked out and so weren't really identified in the 90% estimate and the baseline. So a couple of those relate to some really complicated utility things that had to be coordinated. There's a relocation of a sewer in Barrows. There's some high voltage PGE lines near Roy Rogers and Shoals that had to be moved, and that wasn't fully developed until, you know, right before bid. The next item there, pre-mobilization standby. So typical standard practice now for the program to, as part of the bid, to identify, hey, if the program's not ready to go, what would your contractor, what would your standby cost be? And so at least you get that price in the bid, you know, in the event that there is some delay. So talking to our project manager, we don't think there's going to be a delay, but anyway, that's following our standard process. As well as adding in vibration risk assessment and mitigation. And so as we're building these projects in more developed urban areas, we kind of learn from our raw water facilities that it's always good to have a plan to address construction vibration. And so that's a new element that is being assigned to the contractor. And then the last one is instrumentation and controls system integrator. So this project, although it's mostly a pipeline project, it does have a facility associated with it, the pressure and flow control facility down by Greenberg Road. So because of that, it needs some instrumentation and controls work. Kind of how that process works is during the design, we work with our system integrator, and then that works gets assigned to the contractor during construction. But really the big part of it, we think, relates to the pipe fabrication and installation costs. And I'll kind of break that down. So that's probably, nearly about $7 million. One of those are fuel costs. And so since November of last year, we've seen fuel prices escalate between gas and diesel. You know, in the Portland area and the West Coast in general, we've seen those costs go up 25 to 30%. So we think that's a contributor to it. We think risk is part of it as well. There's a number of kind of, uncertainty in the market, and then some of the global things that are going on is creating some additional uncertainty, and certainly that feeds into the fuel costs. And then the market is busy. The contractors that we have working on the program, as well as other contractors, they're flat out busy, and so their equipment's being utilized, their labor is being utilized, and so we think there's, likely in some cases they're going to have to use rental equipment with rental rates, and then find the labor, to support these activities. And so in our approach to establish the baseline budget, so we looked at what some of the previous costs were, and so we had, pipeline installation costs at around just under $1,200 a foot. We've seen in previous bids, our baseline had it higher than that by $100-$150 a foot. But what we saw in the bid was it actually came in even $200-$300 per foot higher than that. And when you apply that to the 17,700 feet, that's where a lot of this comes from. And then, the last item then, their limited bidder participation. This isn't anything that we can really, can't give you a definitive answer, related to this, but we're getting, this is one of our concerns at the end of the program, where we had all of our pre-qualified contractors busy, and they are all busy doing projects. At the end of 2022, I think Dave has talked before about, we're going to have about 15 projects in construction all at the same time. And so when you get down to the end and you have limited bidder participation, that really doesn't help with the competition and the pricing. We thought that we were going to have three bids. We had a third contractor that, gave us every indication they were going to bid, but I guess at the last minute they determined that, they weren't going to provide a bid. So we think, in total, this represents why there is that increased cost that's reflected in the bids. And again, just, a lot of uncertainty going on in the market right now. Next slide. So again, because this is entirely a TVWD ancillary project, all the costs are attributable to TVWD, and that's, reflected here. Next slide. So I guess, yep, at this point, happy to take any questions or try and address any comments that anybody has.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mike on this presentation? Doesn't appear that we do, Mike. That was a good presentation, and thank you, TVWD, for paying for this. All right. Do I have a motion and a second to approve contract 2022-055 for $49,215,771 with Emery & Sons Construction Group, LLC, for MPE 1.3 pipeline construction for the Willamette Water Supply Program? Again, please remember to state your name prior to making the motion and the second for this action item.
This is Commissioner Duggan. I move approval.
Commissioner Santucci seconds.
All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second. The board recorder will now conduct the voting roll call for the record.
All right, City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsborough?
Yes.
TVWD?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. The motion passes. Next thing on the agenda today is information items. Item A is Ms. Bennett will present a staff report on the business agenda item planned for the June WWSS Commission Board meeting.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. This time there are two anticipated action items for June. The first is the raw water facilities guaranteed maximum price number 1.5 for construction. Construction of the raw water facilities phase one work is complete and the phase two work is anticipated to begin this fall. There are multiple items such as completing the pile driving in the river, some upper site utility work and lower site drainage improvements that have been identified as ideal summer work items and have been moved ahead of schedule into guaranteed maximum price 1.5 for delivery this year. The anticipated value of the work is $2.9 million. Staff plan to provide an overview of the scope and budget and recommend approval at the June board meeting. The second and final item is the WWSP Program and Construction Management Services Fiscal Year 2023 Annual Work Plan. Stantec Consulting Services is contracted to provide program and construction management services for the WWSP through 2026. Specific services are authorized on an annual basis through approval of an annual work plan. The FY23 annual work plan identifies Stantec's planned services, planned staffing, estimated fees, and key assumptions for delivery of program and construction management support services. And this estimate is correlated to WWSP's approved 2022 baseline 7.0. The estimated fee for the program and construction management services annual work plan, is approximately $24.8 million. Staff will provide an overview of the work plan and recommend its approval at the June board meeting. That is the end of the upcoming action items. Are there any questions I can answer?
I see none. Thank you very much. Item B on our information items, Mr. Kraska will present a staff report discussion discussing the fiscal year 2022-23 board meeting dates and meeting location.
Thank you again, Chair Judah and Commissioners. So one more time for me. So this is just an information item, even though attached to the staff report, you see a draft resolution. What this is about, two items really, is about our calendar, our meeting calendar for next fiscal year and how we meet for the next fiscal year. So regarding the meeting calendar, as we look ahead to our agendas for the next fiscal year, we will have far fewer business agenda items. We're pretty much done with our resolutions of need for our real estate activities. We're still negotiating a lot of properties, trying to land all of that. But in terms of the board actions, we're not seeing a lot of those coming up. We're almost at the end of bidding all of our construction contracts. And so the need to meet for business agenda items anyways is going to be less frequent. So we're certainly the team here is certainly willing to meet monthly, continue on this pattern, but being respectful of your time and just kind of the efficiency of the organization, we're offering to basically modify the agenda or modify the calendar so that starting, I believe it was October of next year, we would go to a meeting once every other month cycle. Thinking that might be frequent enough for us for having business agenda items. We would still hold, essentially to preserve time on the calendars, we would still have placeholder meetings for, I think we had targeted the odd number of months, but probably cancel those if we didn't have any business agenda items. And so we're looking for your feedback on that, your perspectives on that. The other item is how to meet. Certainly we've been successful in these Teams meetings and getting a lot of work done that way. With masking and social distancing requirements going away, we could meet in person if that was your preference. We could also do hybrid meetings. TVWD is modifying their boardroom to support hybrid meetings. It's going to take them, I'd say it's going to take them into August or so to finalize installing all of that infrastructure. Probably give them some time to test it out a few times before we start doing that, if that was your preference. So maybe start with the October meeting or so. But anyway, so wanted your feedback on those two things. And then next meeting at our June meeting, we would bring this back for action, for board action, likely on consent agenda, so we wouldn't have it as a business agenda item. But with that, I'll stop and get your perspectives on those two things.
All right, thank you. Jim or Mark, one of you want to go ahead with any comments or questions?
Sure, I'll take a whack at it. First of all, I think that moving at the right time toward bi-monthly meetings makes a lot of sense. I mean, this is, you know, this is a project management body to a much greater degree than it is a policymaking body. And so the likelihood of significant events at a policy level taking place on a monthly basis is fairly low. But it, obviously it does make sense to leave open the door for meetings sooner when something comes up in the project management side or the budgeting or funding side of things that, you know, to allow the board to get together and do their work. As far as meeting in person versus meeting you know, via Teams or Zoom, again, as a primarily not policymaking entity, the WWSS actually works really efficiently this way. And you know, my personal opinion, and I can't speak for the city of Beaverton, but my personal opinion is it works just as well like this as it would in person. So if hybrid is the way to go, you know, that's a great way to do it. But if everybody feels that this has been effective and efficient in getting through the last couple of years of work, which has been a ton of work, and there's no particular reason to move away from electronic meetings.
All right, thank you. Jim, did you have any comments you would like to make on that?
I concur with everything that Mark said. I don't have a huge preference one way or another. I think it would be nice during the summer months and fall months to maybe meet hybrid or allow for the hybrid option and allow for in-person. But if we stayed on Teams exclusively, I'd be fine with that as well. So I think staff should probably think about what has worked best for them. And I will be able to accommodate either, I believe, as we go forward. As far as the location goes, the TVWD is fairly centrally located, but I didn't mind when we met out at the Hillsborough complex, or if we needed to meet at Beaverton City Hall. So I'm open to whatever I think staff can work out and would accommodate the needs of staff more than the needs of us commissioners. That's my two cents.
Thank you both. I third those comments. I'm a retired person, so I don't have the logistics to juggle for getting from one location to another or those other demands on my time as I was used to when I was not a retired person. So, Jim, I think you're right. I think staff needs to take care of this. I'm old school. There's a lot more to our team than Jim, Mark, Dave, and I, and Joel, and Mike Rich. You know, there's a lot of other faces on there that we no longer get to see or talk to in these Zoom meetings that we did get to interact with when we met in person. So, you know, for those minor reasons, I like meeting in person and getting to know the rest of the team instead of just initials at the bottom of my screen and forgetting who they belong to. So, but I'm flexible either way. I'm a big supporter of the hybrid option. So when people can be there, that's the way to do it. But if nobody's going to attend in person or almost nobody, then Zoom here works great, or Teams, I guess. Did you get the feedback you need there, Dave?
I think so. Very supportive and flexible feedback. So I'd say just to pare it back to make sure we're pointing in the right direction in terms of the meeting frequency, the board is supportive of switching at the appropriate time to bi-monthly meetings. And I think that works great for us all, but we will have placeholder meetings, the months that we aren't intending to meet, just in case. So that's it. Then in terms of the meeting location, we will default for the time being, because TVWD isn't ready for hybrid, we would default to Teams meetings, But I'm also sensing that there is a desire to periodically perhaps get together face to face and kind of, I think it was the WIF board meeting, I used the analogy of, because we had the same sort of discussion at the WIF board meeting, used the analogy of the microwave oven. There was a period of time that we didn't have microwave ovens, and it's probably not the best way to heat up food, but it sure is convenient and it's hard to give up on. And so I feel like these Teams meetings are kind of similar. It's kind of our microwave oven where we've figured out how to use them. They might not be the best in all realms, but they're super convenient and they have a lot of benefits to them. But they're not perfect. And so maybe there's a way that we could maybe a couple times a year or something or like that have a face-to-face meeting where the team comes in, meets with you, has a board meeting. We can all kind of reconnect on that, and then otherwise it's hybrid or Teams. But I'll work with the team on that a little bit and come back next month with a proposal to share with you. How does that sound?
Sounds great. Got a thumbs up from the commission, so thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see, I'm reading ahead here. So the next information item, the next board meeting is scheduled for June 2nd via Microsoft Teams. For communication and non-agenda items, Dave, I'd like to throw you under the bus here real quick if you have one more minute, and that is that I know on behalf of the city of Hillsborough and the WWSS, you came and met with the Hillsborough City Council and brought them up to date. It'd be nice if you gave a quick and dirty on how that meeting went, and what did you hear?
That was so long ago, at least a week or two ago. Things happen so quickly, and I forget. I'm glad Nikki is turning on her camera, too, so because Nikki was definitely more than half of that presentation that we made. But Nikki and I made a presentation to the Hillsborough City Council. Nikki did the first part as far as presenting kind of the beginnings of the program. It's like, why are we going to this water supply specifically for Hillsborough's drive and kind of how that decision was made? And then I came in and presented how we've stood up the program and what we've accomplished to date, and then also some of the fiscal challenges that we've come across toward the end of last calendar year and how we're dealing with them now. And then Nikki then presented what that meant for Hillsborough's finances in terms of how Hillsborough was managing the financial impacts that we're seeing on the program. And altogether, from my perspective anyways, I think it went really smoothly. It was in a couple of years, it was the first live presentation that I made in a city council meeting like that. So that was kind of fun, seeing people in three dimensions and everything, instead of just talking to my computer that I've gotten so used to. So I enjoy that, actually. But I think it went great. We got some good questions and tremendous support from Hillsborough City Council in terms of the work that the whole team is doing. So I think it went well. But Nikki, your perspective.
Yeah, I think it went really well. You know, we gave some of the background because we have some new counselors to give, you know, this is a long program. This decision was made back in, I think, Utilities Commission in February 2013. And so gave them some history there. I would say the bulk of the questions we got were really related to Hillsborough financing and our financial assumptions that we've had. And we shared our fiscal policies that the Utilities Commission adopted and the council authorized quite a while ago. So I think it went over pretty well. Mayor Calloway did ask us to pass on thank you to the team for their hard work and dedication on this, because it's been a challenging time. And so I attended the all staff meeting of Dave's team, I think last Tuesday morning, can't tell time, and thanked them from the Mayor, Council, and Utilities Commission for their hard work. So I did get that done. Reminds me, I have not followed up Commissioner Judah with your neighbor to let him know I did that. So we should do that. But overall, I think it went really well, you know, considering all the challenges that we've had. So.
All right, thank you both for bringing that up. Are there any other non-agenda items or communications to talk about today? Seeing and hearing none?
I will just add that yes. I wish the best for those responsible for doing traffic management in the Shoals Ferry Road corridor during that project. Best wishes to them.
Thank you. It's appreciated.
probably requires additional life insurance policies. All right, there being no further business before the Board of Commissioners, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you as well.